Get it? 316-6196 is the phone number. And you'll be happy that you went with them. I've used them twice. If I ever move again, not saying I will, probably won't, but if I do, I'll definitely be hitting up Black Tie Moving. They show up when they say they're going to show up. They stay on budget. They treat your stuff like it's their stuff. It's just professional, man. Like, it's just no games. I've heard some really bad stories over the years of people that make the mistake and don't go with Black Tie Moving. Don't be one of those people. Call them. Get on the schedule. 316-6196 is the phone number. It's Black Tie Moving. Change moving the city of Memphis. Matthew Boyer, author of Recalibrate, and also former illegal book. I mean, I hate to say illegal bookmaker. It feels so bad, but I mean, it's technically he was. It's what he's going to prison for. it's a victimless crime, I would say. But he accepted over $350 million in bets. And I believe his story is that he paid taxes on his earnings. But from the government's perspective, it was an illegal operation, and you have to pay taxes on everything. Like, you not just your net, or everything. Everything you did,
one of the things he pleaded guilty to was filing false tax return.
Right.
Wasn't all up front.
That's right. So anyway, we'll talk to Matthew at 12:25.
But he paid something.
Had to pay some.
But we didn't get it all, John.
Well, maybe we can get some more when we talk to him at 12:25. For the government. We need it. Are we cutting taxes for everybody? I mean,
I think he's paid the 1.6 back, though, that he had to do in restitution.
Yeah.
He paid it before his sentencing. So he's paid back what he has to,
it's
I think.
Pretty amazing.
But we can ask him.
Are you paying your taxes over there? I'm a little worried about you, man.
You're pointing at me?
Yeah.
Oh, it's easy. Yeah, I'm paying plenty of taxes.
All right.
Not like this illegal person who is going to jail that you're interviewing at 12:25.
I feel like my man still got millions. He just dropped that 1.6 off.
He said,
hey,
guy,
I'm going to come back out.
There's no question about
it. Is this the first criminal we've had? No, we've had other criminals on.
Wow, Brad's on his high horse on the show today, isn't he?
I think we've had other criminals on, right?
There are worse criminals out there than a guy that takes bets, all right? I think
that's what wagers say.
The only reason why he's going to prison, let's just call it what it is because the government didn't get their cut. That's what it's all about. I mean, it's just, they don't care. It's just they want their, the United States government wants their cut. And if you don't give them their cut, they go come for your ass. And that's why
they will.
All those years, Brad, you've been falsifying your tax records.
Now, this is where John is making up things. And this is one you don't joke about, actually, on the radio, because you know what the deal is, bro.
Oh, so, I can't joke about you.
No, it's all good. No, I pay my taxes. You are capping, and it's fine. Rarely am I rubbed the wrong way, but I just wanted to clarify so that, like my attorney is listening.
Yeah, no, Brad pays taxes.
I pay my taxes.
Actually, quarterly.
No. I enjoy your jokes. They're fun. This one, false.
All right. So anyway, Matthew Boyer's going to join us. I hope. After if he hears any of this, he may change his mind. But
he's come to terms with it.
He'll join us at 12:25. Let's do the rundown. NFL got underway last night with quite the game. Quite the game to kick things off between the Dallas Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles. Started with some fireworks with Jalen Carter spitting on Dak Prescott and getting it. I mean, it was just so weird, right? Because not only did you have Jalen Carter spitting on Dak, you also have an Eagle who is getting carted off at the same time.
Season ending.
Yeah. So you have sort of all these things going on at the same time. It's like really nuts because the kickoff return happens, and then there's like a 15-minute, stoppage, it feels like.
A stoppage in which initially, and I don't think it came until much later, we did not get the video from NBC about what Dak had done, which made Jalen Carter's act even more, you couldn't incomprehensible.
Yeah.
Couldn't understand it.
Yeah.
And sure, again, Dak baited him, and we saw it. It still doesn't change anything about how we feel or how stupid that was that Jalen Carter did. But it does. It was context.
Right.
It provided something to sort of,
exactly
explain the mind of Jalen Carter.
Exactly.
He even apparently asked Dak, "Were you trying to spin? Are you trying to spit on me?" Like he got himself worked up off that.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Yes.
So a weird start there, obviously to the game, and then it was fun for a half. It was back and forth. I mean, Dak's throwing dots. Jalen Hurts is using his legs to move the ball. Like it just was a great game for the first half. And then it just slows to a crawl in the second. Lightning delay, a red zone turnover from Miles Sanders, and You know, I get the Cowboys had chances, right? They had a chance there in the final 2 minutes of the game to not only go down the field on offense, but they had three timeouts to get a stop, and they could not do it. I mean, that's like the Eagles are probably one of the hardest teams to get a stop on in that situation.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like they're going to run the ball on you for 10 yards. If all they got to get is 10 yards, they're going to get that. And so the Dallas Cowboys do fall a little bit short there, 24-20. So that was last night. Tonight, we have another one. This is the biggest game of the year. It's in Brazil, Sao Paulo, the last Friday night game to start a season ever. We can still do Friday night games in the future.
I'm sure the NFL will probably find some other way to make an exception. But
well, yeah. You can do it in like, don't they have like, Friday night games, like, in December?
Yes, yes.
Oh, there's no high school football.
Yeah, just about the year.
It's amazing that high school football has a, you know.
It's in our broadcasting act. That,
right, we don't broadcast high school.
Isn't that what my money man down at Texas A&M,
mm-hmm.
isn't that what he's asking? Have you seen the commercials with mm-hmm. him? He's asking to be changed so that we can get, it's a save college athletics because we're going to lose the Olympic sport. No. I'm just talking about that broadcasting act.
I haven't seen that one.
That is part of this rule. I thought that's what he's trying to get changed. It's a random thought, but I think it is somehow part of this.
Yeah, so you have Chiefs Chargers tonight. There was a little bit of news in the injury report. Mekhi Becton has popped up on the injury report and is questionable. He's one of their better offensive linemen there for the Chargers, and they're already down Rashawn Slater. That kind of adds to the difficulty for the Chargers tonight. Chiefs out there is a 3-point favorite. I think this probably closes 3.5 is my guess by the time we get to kick. You try to envision things, right? You try to envision like, all right, how could this look? What's the Chargers' path? Like, how do the Chargers win, bro? How do they win this game? I mean, they're already down. They're off, you know, maybe they're two best offensive linemen. One for sure. The Chiefs are motivated.
Mm-hmm.
They upgraded their offensive line. Like, all the talk in Kansas City this offseason has been that Mahomes finally has a left tackle now.
Yep.
I don't remember who it was that they brought in. But whoever it is, they think he's like the solution. So how did, like, now you get Mahomes a left tackle, you give him some more weapons, he's motivated. Like, I don't know, bro. I don't see how this is anything other than the Chiefs party.
We said both of us thought Chiefs yesterday when we did over and under. I could sit up here and try to make that case for you. I do feel like it's a challenge that typically I would take on a Chargers win, what it looks like, other than Justin Herbert just going nuts. I don't see it happening again. I just look more towards that KC side. How they felt like, and if you've listened to Andy Reid talk about it and seen some of this KC stuff in the offseason, they felt like they were tight in the Super Bowl last year going for three. And so they feel like last year's loss was on them and they did something they don't typically do, which is play tight.
Yep.
And so this whole thing about this season, we discussed this a little bit yesterday, has been a new mindset. That wasn't us. Let's get back. You've had the motivation for Patrick Mahomes just saying with the dad bod stuff. I just think they're locked in. And so I got yesterday wrong. Thought Philly was going to absolutely roll. We both did. Thought they were going to cover everything else. Got that game script all wrong. This one could be wrong too, but I feel like KC takes care of business.
Yeah, I'm in that same boat.
We're not talking about 8.5 points here of covering. What's the number? Three?
It's three.
Yeah.
Now you're on a neutral now.
Not concerned about that.
But we talked about it yesterday. Like, I mean, if this game's in Kansas City is 4.5, that feels completely legitimate. Like, that doesn't feel like a stinky line there.
And it just feels like there's also been an offseason sort of wanting to crown Denver and the Chargers as risers in that division, sort of next up, maybe ready. Chiefs don't play that stuff, man. They'll use it as motivation.
Yeah, 100%.
This is statement game for them, for the AFC West.
Yes. Okay, that's not the only thing. We have NFL this weekend. You will not be in action. You will have to wait.
Yep.
Until Monday.
It's a long wait.
It's a gift and a curse, because you're ready to. You're gonna wake up on Sunday. You're gonna be ready to roll.
You're right.
But you're gonna have to wait, and because you're stand alone, brother.
But it'll be all alone. Us when I come in here on Monday. It'll be
See,
a great feeling.
That's what
it'll
it's
be all
about
us that night.
You know, if I would rank it, it would be definitely Sunday night number one, right? Nothing better than being one of the teams on Sunday night, because you just get the whole thing. You get the whole production.
No, it's true.
Nobody does it better than NBC on Sunday night.
It's pretty darn good.
And then you got Monday night, obviously pretty good, number two. And then Thursday's whatever. It's just another game, you know. And then, of course, the last would just be a blend of all the Sunday games.
You're right, though. NBC does a good job.
Bro, it's unreal. They always, they know everything.
Maria's got a feature.
Yeah, exactly.
Tirico and Collinsworth now have a nice little chemistry.
It really is, I think, the best television consistently that I watch.
Oh, you mean the NBC Sports and how they do?
No. Sunday night. Sunday night.
Just their presentation on Sunday night.
I would put that up against like a show, like even a non-sports show. Just like if you watch, like you will be entertained even if you don't like football. If you watch Sunday Night Football. Because they tell stories, like you said, they're gonna have features. They're gonna know things about these players that we don't know, and they're gonna bring them up, and then you're gonna get Collinsworth.
He does that, and we laugh about it. But the man was saying this delay could change the game, because for athletes, professional athletes, to shut it down like that and to rev it back up, he said it's tough to do.
This was
as they were walking in. I'm dismissing it, saying stop, Collinsworth, you just do it. And we get a 3-point second half.
A three-point freaking second half.
It was completely different.
It was totally different.
Has to be some truth. It's just he's done it long enough.
Yep.
That he's gonna make some point that sticks, and you know. And again, him and Tirico now have a nice little chemistry. So I hadn't thought about it, but you're right. Their presentation is top notch, probably the best.
Yes. So you have to wait till Monday. Yeah. But in terms of this weekend, any game in particular that you're going to be on the couch for?
Again, we Bills Ravens is the marquee game.
That's the Sunday night.
But I would say that I told you don't care about it, but I like and I have my own reasons. Aaron Rodgers, what's he going to look like? Bears have actually got them this year. And then you got Justin Fields going against his old team.
So that's a rematch. Okay.
Pittsburgh and the Jets is a freaking storyline full game. They could very well be teams that don't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
I would. That's more for Pittsburgh. I don't expect the Jets to do that. But there's a ton of interest for me in that game, and particularly as it relates to how Aaron Rodgers looks. You know, Mike Tomlin has tied his wagon to Aaron Rodgers.
Yep.
That is this could be it.
Yeah.
If this goes nasty, I would say, Tomlin, what's your plan now? Because we've done everything with you. Maybe it's time for, it's time to look at and moving on. But I don't know, it depends. And what are we talking about? We got our man Calvin Austin. Everybody's talked about how all the defense is going to be focused on Metcalf. So it feels like there's opportunity for our man as the number two. There's a lot of reason to look at that game and find a ton of interest in that one.
Pretty disgusting
below
game.
Below the radar.
You know, I have to say.
It's a below the radar little storyline chock full game.
Yeah, so the only bet that I have in on NFL this weekend is the Jags -3 against Carolina. And it was announced that their left tackle is doubtful.
See, to me, that game is just disgusting.
But see, there's some intrigue there because you have the Travis Hunter effect.
Please sell it. Well, I have him on my fantasy team, so you're off to a good start selling this game to me.
And that's about it. A new debut of Liam Cohen as the head coach. I don't know.
I did a better job selling Jets and Steelers.
No, I mean, there's more.
With all due respect.
No, I agree. I mean, I think there's more to chew on that game, though, right?
But you have an edge in this one, and that is why you choose.
I guess. Yeah, I don't know.
You're not looking for storylines when you push the button and say bet.
I mean, I think the Raiders-Patriots is interesting from that perspective because it's Josh McDaniels still in New England. I don't know how that guy continues to get jobs up there, but he's their OC.
And don't you trust Mike Vrabel?
I do.
Okay.
I do. I think he'll do a good job.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. But he's not rolling with Josh unless he trusts, right?
Josh just must be a guy that's just not organized. Because, he obviously gets the OC jobs, but he every time he's been a head coach, he's been terrible. So he must just not be a good manager of people or organized.
Could be Cliff Kingsbury. Could be Eberflus.
That's right.
Same kind of guys, perhaps.
That's right. Some people can't do that. Some people have to have their one job,
and they'll
do great at it.
And they're better at it.
And I don't know if
Fangio appears to be that.
That's right. That's right. Is he? Is he in Chicago?
And he back in Philly?
Was he back in Philly?
Has he not been there the last couple of years? Did I put him somewhere else?
Yeah, he's Philly. Yeah. And he wasn't terrible with Denver, but he wasn't very good.
No.
Yeah. Was he like a 7-9 type guy?
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Yeah, he was 7-9, 5-11, 7-10. So he was bad.
He finished on that list.
Last 2 years in a row.
He's on that list.
In the AFC West. So, yeah. No, you're exactly right. And
Dennis Allen. I can give you these all day.
Right. Guys who, Shane Steichen probably going to be that guy
might be.
Here in a year if things don't go well for him this year in Indianapolis. So, But yeah, I think Raiders Patriots will be intriguing in that regard because, you know, you're getting some rematch stuff going on there. Let's see if there's anything else. Not really interested in. I will say I am going to be paying attention to Titans Broncos.
As you should be.
Yeah. Because y'all have crowned Cam.
No, I've crowned that Denver defense, and so this is quite the challenge.
We have two crownings going on simultaneously. One must emerge. I think in this one it will probably be that Denver defense because it's just a rookie quarterback on the road making his first start.
Can we have a draft where the number one guy actually plays everybody that's drafted below him? Hasn't that been the last two where that hasn't been the case?
Right. Yeah.
Who's Bryce, it? CJ.
Yep.
Caleb, Jaden.
Yep.
This would be Cam and who?
I mean, there wasn't another one, was there?
In the first?
I don't think there was another.
Not one more?
I know Jackson
was
went second.
They all second round?
I think so, bro.
No, what about, was Shook second round? Shook?
Yeah.
Cam Moore's the only, well, then he has no choice if he's outplayed by all second rounders. Just one quarterback taken last year. I did not realize that.
That's, I mean, I can't think of another one. Oh, Dart was first. He went 25th.
I'm just falling for your stuff.
Well, I mean, he kind of, it's late.
But Shador did not go.
I thought
there was one more. I'm making that up.
I mean, I don't think he'll get compared to Jackson Dart because...
No, he'll outplay everybody. We haven't seen the last
there's
years.
There's a big, like a lot of teams passed on Jackson Dart. You know, like with Jaden and Caleb, it was like right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Bryce and CJ, it was right, you know, literally the pick after. So it was a little different. I don't think he'll be held to that. I think that's kind of the good news for him. Is like there's,
it's great news for him.
Because Travis Hunter, it doesn't really seem to me that his career has gotten off to a great start. It kind of feels like he might just be a guy. We'll see. He's been hurt. But it has not gotten off to a rousing start there for him in Jacksonville. Like nobody's saying, oh, well, Travis Hunter is about to be a dog. Like you don't see those headlines.
Yeah.
You know, like he's been hurt again. So maybe that's part of it. But. Like, you know, Ashton Jeanty, I'm low on. I think we're going to look back on that and say that was a mistake. And then it's just a bunch of, like, tackles and defensive linemen for Cam. So he's actually in a really good spot in terms of, like, comparison.
I think your Ashton Jeanty take, and I've heard it. I heard it Wednesday, too. I think it's nuts. That dude, he was rated high on every list.
Just,
you saw one highlight of him running over somebody, and it scared you thinking that. Dude, he ran around dudes at Boise State, too, and he lasted. He ran over and around. He is fully capable of running around, and you best believe they're coaching him.
Yeah.
Dude, don't take all of those, step out of bounds, all that, man. It's going to be fine, dude.
I'm a little worried.
This is not a miss like you've been used to.
I mean, I don't think it'll be a miss on talent. I just think his durability will be the problem.
I think the problem will be, can you guys, and you should be able to with Brock Bowers out there, is establish enough of a passing game, keep defenses honest so they don't stack the box. If they're not stacking the box on Ashton Jeanty, something he faced in every college game that he played, then, bro, you're fine. I get durability concerns, but this guy, those weren't in college. You don't need to start off on this foot. I get it, man. He ran over, you know, Byron Brown is the same example. Is he going to last a season because of the physical style? In that case, the dude's a quarterback.
Right.
As well.
Right.
It cost him last year, too.
Yeah. Well, I hope you're right and
Jeanty
I'm wrong.
Played.
I hope you're right and I'm wrong because it would be nice to have a future to build on here. So, anyway, that's NFL Week 1. It's already kicked off last night. Back at it tonight, 7 o'clock. In Brazil, what time would it be in Brazil at 7 o'clock?
Close to our time, probably.
Oh, really?
It's not like hours ahead or anything.
It's 2 hours. Yeah. So it would be 9 o'clock there.
There you go.
A little late night, man. A little late night at 9 o'clock in Brazil, man. We'll see you at 9, Patrick.
Everybody stay safe.
Everybody stay safe, Jason says. I hope y'all got some security. You know any people down there?
No.
Not in Brazil. No peoples down there.
Mm-mm.
Anyway, 7 o'clock tonight, Chiefs Chargers will be a fun one.
Memphis women's soccer did not get the win. They did get the draw, and that's doing something when you're going up 0-0 against the number 2 ranked team in the country, which was the Tennessee Vols women's soccer team. Highest they've ever been ranked, and this was the highest ranked opponent Memphis has faced. And for it, they got a record crowd of 2281, according to my man Lawrence Dockery, who I believe was out there last night as well. Listen, the Tennessee goalkeeper was phenomenal. That Memphis had the chances to win that match. Remember, they were trying to avenge a 1-0 loss to Tennessee last year. But that goalie, Caden Norris, for Tennessee, had five saves in goal, and had the biggest one was her second save, 41st minute, when she saved that penalty kick from Ashley Henderson. But listen, with a tip of the cap to Tennessee, they obviously are good. If you saw it, I turned over to ESPN Plus and watched some of it. Even though I was obviously glued to football last night too, but you saw the difference in physical stature of athlete, like between Tennessee, SEC team, plenty of resources, and Memphis. But what wasn't different was like the effort level. Like it's crazy that Brooks's team. This is the youngest one he's had in 26 years. I think 25 of the 28 he's got are all freshmen and sophomores. It's supposed to be a reset, and you're going toe-to-toe with this team that's physically bigger than you. And, again, coming out with a 0-0 draw. To me, and I know Brooks would say, no, that's not accurate, Jay. To me, it's like a win. You did not lose to Tennessee. My guess is you're going to go up the rankings. That's why I feel like this is a win. You're going to go up the rankings from 14 when you're going, you know, 0-0 against number two. You did not allow a goal. Keep in mind, this is a Tennessee team that had outscored its opponents 18-0 all year. Like I mentioned, Norris hasn't given up a goal all year long.
Amazing.
You had more shots on goal. You outplayed them in many ways. So I just would not come away from this disappointed whatsoever if I'm a member of that Memphis women's soccer team or if I'm a fan of that program. And by the way, you should be by now, because they are an absolute powerhouse. And Brooks, in playing his fourth SEC team this year, didn't get the win, but they have not lost to an SEC opponent.
That's amazing.
This year either. They're 5-0-1, same record as the Tennessee Vols.
That's honestly a huge thing.
I expect to move up the rankings, 0-0
for sure.
In this case, I expect to move up the rankings come next Tuesday.
I mean, they could win it all. I mean, they could.
That's how they feel. Yeah. From the quotes and everything last night, after you go toe-to-toe with them like that,
no doubt.
They've knocked off 1-4,
yes.
North Carolina and UCLA, Tennessee.
It's amazing.
So if you're
Memphis
playing them head up like that,
it really is amazing.
Then absolutely you can do anything this season. It doesn't make any sense because this is his youngest ever team.
Right.
He's only got one senior.
I mean, he's got a powerhouse over there. He really does. If I could bet on Memphis women's soccer, I would bet the Tigers to win it all. I really would.
Oh, you'd get great value, I'm sure.
Yeah, would I? You think? I mean, I think that maybe the market would be sharp.
They'd still pick the P4s before
right,
Memphis.
Right. But at like a 12-1, 15-1, something like that.
They weren't even ranked this year to start the year because he replaced him. He replaced everything. He's so young.
Yeah.
So nobody expected this rise up, but this is what they do, man.
Remarkable. Really is. What a job he's doing down there.
Yep. And good to see a record crowd out there as well.
Yep.
Because we had hoped for that, had Brooks on earlier this week. And again, fantastic job last night by both Coach Monaghan and the women's soccer program.
All right, we'll come back. Matthew Boyer going to join us on the other side. We'll talk to him about his story and you know, being the bookie for Shohei Ohtani's interpreter. I mean, that's the hook. That's the news peg there, but there's a lot more to that. We'll talk to him when we get back. Jason and John, Nutty Turner FM, ESPN. Matthew Boyer, once upon a time, was one of the biggest bookies in the world. He's got a brand new book out. It's called Recalibrate. And there's no doubt that he has one of the most interesting lives that I have ever read about, listened to interviews from. And he's nice enough to join us. Now, Matthew, before we get into the book and your life and everything that's going on, how bad a beat was that Dallas Cowboys over last night to have 41 at half and not go over? That's disgusting. Wow.
That would say that's an understatement. I've been in many positions where I've seen 0 points scored in the second half or first half, and man, you think you have what we call a lock or a guarantee, and that proves that there never is one of those.
No question about it, especially in the soft markets like the NFL. All right, you have a book. It's at Amazon. It's called Recalibrate, and for those that may not know your story, I don't even want to simplify it to this, but it's how most people would know you, is you were taking bets from Shohei Ohtani's interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara. And that's not the only person you were taking bets from, obviously. But when you sit down to write a book like this, how do you possibly know where to begin?
You know, truth be told, I've never wrote a book in my life, and it was actually very therapeutic to put your life out. In fact, every person I speak to, regardless of how powerful or what your story is, I recommend everybody to do it because it's amazing. But where I started was from the beginning, from when my life changed, when 29 federal agents raided my home with guns, and I was putting my son in my wife's car. That was a very drastic change, clearly, in my life. And it was probably the best and worst day I've ever had in my life to this point.
So I guess, you know, again, there's so much to dive into. When did you building out this network of people that are betting, and obviously you know, you're not the only person that's doing this. You just were the biggest. But when you're building out this network, like, when, if at all, does it strike you that, hey, like, they might someday come after me? They made like, is that a thought? Is that a concern? Do you wipe it, you know, write it off as, they got bigger fish to fry? Like, just take me through your mentality as it relates to what you were doing day in and day out and the threat of this happening one day.
Yeah, truth be told, when I was young, I was clearly betting sports myself with bookmakers, and I always have the bug. I love sports. I love betting. Gambling is the two biggest combination for me. So as I continue to lose money as a degenerate gambler to bookmakers, I said to myself, you know what? Why don't I just start taking bets too? It's going to feed my personal losses. And then that transpired to be a bigger every year, and eventually became a business. And what I realized was all of a sudden I was a bookmaker. It just kind of happened. And as I grew and got bigger, then I realized not only is this a lucrative business, but it's something I love doing. And the sad part of it, it's illegal. And so you start thinking about the consequences a little bit, but I was a young guy with a couple kids and truly was just doing it for fun. Now, fast forward to when I'm about 30, that's when it became a very serious business. And I actually just started dropping everything I was doing. I was a commodity trader on a very high level. I owned a boat dealership and all kinds of different businesses, and none of them really had the passion that I had for bookmaking. So as I dove into that business more and more, it started growing as I got big tycoon entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, et cetera. And the more I did that, the more, you know, volume I created. So therefore the profit margin got higher. And at the same time, so did my own gambling addiction and Las Vegas casinos and trips around the world. And, you know, they lure you in with all these extravagant, you know, trips, et cetera. So as I did that, I got more gambling myself. And to answer your question, the whole time in the back of my mind, I was like wondering, am I ever going to get in trouble for this? I wasn't hurting people. You know, I was paying taxes, but clearly not the right amount. And I had to make a decision. What's the best way to handle this moving forward? And so I just started paying extra amount in taxes and made sure that I never threatened or harmed anyone, because those are the things that people get in trouble for. And as I continued to build my business, I really made a decision that when people did owe me money and didn't pay or tried not to pay, that rather than threatening them or going after them, I really just looked in the mirror and decided it's my fault. I didn't vet the customer. I didn't do my homework, or maybe my agent didn't. And I just tried to learn from every experience as I grew. And that really helped me from making any more poor choices or doing something drastic when it comes to collections. So I think that kept me out of the way of the law. But in 2014, I was wrong. The federal agents raided my home. And that was the first time I had an encounter with the federal agents. And they took just under $1 million out of my house. And they made a deal with me. And it's a deal that to this day I kind of regret, because I had an opportunity to make a drastic change in my life, and I went the wrong way. But anyway, the deal was you sign an abandonment form, which states that I will not get an attorney. They will confiscate all the money, take my electronic devices, run it through their program, and give them back to me, and I can go on my own way. So I did that, and instead of being smart and going back to legal business and writing off the fact that I just got away with being a bookmaker for many, many years and et cetera, I decided to triple down and build my business 5 times bigger than what it was. And that caught up to me again, October 5th, 2023, when they came back. And this time, this time they weren't coming for abandonment form. They were coming for blood. And rightfully so, because I didn't learn my lesson.
Matthew, as all of that is blowing up, I mean, and John's right. I mean, we got 1,000 questions we can ask you. But as the success is coming and you're, you know, the Rolodex and your client, it's growing, and you've got all these celebrities and you've got your own addiction. The other side of that, I mean, you're a father too. And so that balancing that part of it, because, you know, being present for them, I'm trying to figure out how you handled that part of your life, or you know, were able to maintain that in any form when you had so much going on in terms of this explosion in your, you know, in your career, in your lifestyle?
Yeah, you know, that was probably the biggest juggle is, you know, I explain it to people like this. You walk in the home and you leave your work at the door. And of course I wasn't, because I was still watching sports,
right,
and handling my business, my phone. But I tried to maintain still being a great father and a great husband as best I could. But it was a double-edged sword because, you know, there was apparent risk, of course, like we could have been robbed or had something bad happen, you know, doing an illegal business, dealing with some people that, you know, could lose money and things can go sideways. And, being a father of five, I mean, my job is to provide and protect first and foremost. Yep. And for the first time in my life, I have to own it. I mean, the guilt of going away to prison and leaving them behind is definitely going to weigh on me the rest of my life. I never foresaw getting to this. But to answer your question directly, that was an extreme juggle because, you know, most bookmakers, for the most part, are not really, you know, dads of five
family
and going
guys,
to
right.
Yeah, going to volleyball games and things like that. So I think that's interesting about my character and my life is that's what I really was doing. I've never done drugs in my entire life. I've never even tried cocaine or done anything. And I drink alcohol a little bit here and there, but most of what I do was either being a father, being involved in my kid's life, or gambling, you know, personally going to Vegas or all across the country, Monte Carlo, Bahamas, you name it. I was everywhere. And those were my two passions.
We're talking to Matthew Boyer, has the brand new book out. It's called Recalibrate. It's available on Amazon. An amazing story and a lot of layers. Was Ipe Mizuhara the worst gambler you've ever seen?
By far. And I've seen many bad ones that were, you know, close calls. But the reason why he was so terrible really was because he was just betting, as you saw, over 19,000 wagers in literally only 18 months, which they equated that to 26 bets a day, but that's really wrong. It was much more than that because he was cut off many times for many months at a time because he couldn't pay and had to wait for a payment to come in, which I didn't realize until later why. I think it was waiting for the angels to make a wire to the account or a paycheck, if you call it. And so for maybe 2-3 weeks at a time, he wasn't sending money. And then once he reached his max, which was $24 million, I don't know why I chose that as finally capping him because it was just getting so out of control. But I had to draw a line somewhere. And when he didn't send the money, I wouldn't let him play. And so what I'm getting at is he really is betting 50, 60 bets in a day when he was actually gambling. And we all know that the juice overcomes, you know, 50, 60 wagers in a day. It's really difficult to beat unless you're sharp and running robots and algorithms and all kinds of things. And he clearly wasn't doing that. A lot of parlays, a lot of soccer bets. In fact, 80% of the bets were soccer from countries I've never heard of in my life. And he was really bad, which he joked about. I didn't ask him any questions because he made fun of himself in a lighthearted manner. And I had no idea that he was stealing money or, you know, that Shohei wasn't knowing what was going on. That's something I didn't know until which transpired at the very end.
When you, I mean, I have to imagine that he, you know, is the best customer you ever had. Like when you're seeing this happen, I don't know how long he was with you, but when you're just seeing somebody be this terrible, I mean, it must feel like you've found gold. It must feel like you discovered some rare gemstone. Like to have this guy just do and paying for the most part, like how did you sort of balance like, okay, like this guy is so bad morally, it's like but it's just an endless supply of money for you.
Yeah, the third wire when he sent the first wire for $300,000, the second one was $500,000, third one's also $500,000, and to be honest, because I've been debanked at every bank in the country, the wires weren't going to me directly, so I didn't even know it was Shohei Ohtani was sending the money, or his bank account was, I should say, until the third wire transfer came. And that was the first holy cow moment for me because clearly I didn't know Shohei Ohtani was the one bankrolling this or his bank account. And the moment that happened, I knew that was good and bad. I mean, bad in reference to clearly I have the biggest baseball player / athlete in the history of sports betting on my website. And then the second part of that is clearly I now have an endless supply of money available, and at the time he was already down $2 or $3 million on top of what he's already sent me. So of course I saw the greed in me, saw dollar signs. I mean, you know, I was running a business, and that was first and foremost. The second thing I thought was, you know, how do I handle this? Do I ask? Do I just let it go? And I chose not to ask because clearly he was paying, and I was providing a service, and he was very happy with it, clearly as far as he kept going. But let's be honest, I had no idea that it was going to get to the level it did. And I thought maybe he'd lose another million or two and just stop and make payments or shut it down. He just kept asking for more and more and kept paying and paying. So, of course, you know, no one's going to deny $500,000 wires every 2 weeks.
That's what, and I don't correct me. I mean, at any point you think, okay, this might be Shohei. You know, does that come into it at any point?
Oh, absolutely. I thought it was Shohei. I for sure, I thought either it was Shohei or they were partnering in the account, which I've done with many people in my life, or maybe they're just both betting in the account. I went through a million different scenarios, and I definitely thought it was Shohei Ohtani, clearly.
How did you, and it's something else I read about you, and I don't want to get too far off topic, but it's a part of the, hopefully a part of the book and a part of your life, obviously. But at one point, you're taking bets from Pete Rose, and you cut off Charlie Hustle at one point. How did all that start, and tell us that story?
Charlie Hustle was amazing. I was very young when I met him. I think I was like 28 years old at the time. I met him at the Palms Hotel Sportsbook. He was in there betting races. He loved horses. And when I was introduced to him from a buddy of mine named Walt, Walt had a relationship with him. He was an agent for me. And we gave him a little account, actually. It was really small. And he was betting like $200-$300 on horses all day long. And he really was a bad gambler as well, because horses are so tough to beat. And he just loved the horses. He was betting a little bit of baseball and stuff like that. Clearly, he was already retired and out of the league after what happened. But he was signing autographs at Caesars and a couple spots for some side money. And he just loved to gamble. And he was the kindest guy. I truly loved him. And we ended up cutting him off because he was losing all his autograph money. And he really, wow, sadly, didn't have much money at the time. And after his career, which was really sad considering what he did. Mm. And I still believe this day he should be in the Hall of Fame. But he 100% was honorable and did everything. It's just he kept jamming himself up. And Walt actually told him, "Man, Pete, maybe we should just shut this thing down and just play your little bit of money that you have," because he was getting behind. He wasn't able to pay on time, you know, waiting for money to come in from autographs. And we really liked the guy so much, we just kind of nicely told him, maybe we should cut this off.
Yeah, how about that? So
unbelievable.
You are to report to prison next month.
Yeah, October 10th is my surrender date at this moment.
Gotcha.
Waiting to be designated to Lompoc. I hope that's where I go, because it'll be closer for my wife to come see me and my kids. At this point, it takes a little while for the Bureau of Prisons to, you know, locate you a bed, et cetera. And so that's what I'm waiting on. I'm hoping that'll be the case.
So how do you just reconcile, like, this, you know, you have this time between you report, right? I mean, is it something that you think about every minute of the day? Like, how do you sort of just, obviously, you know, you've been doing some interviews, maybe that helps, but
it's self-soothing to tell your story and be busy, you know, to keep your mind off the reality of what's coming. But I'm a realist. You know, I have five kids to feed. I used to make $1 million a month, and I no longer make that kind of money, and I have to take care of my responsibilities and pay back the government and taxes and do the right thing with that, and along with make sure my kids still go to school and are fed. And so those are my obligations, and I put myself in this predicament. I need to be accountable for everything I do, and I really want to teach that to my kids and truly the world. And we all make mistakes, since, you know, there's one bad chapter in a book, but it doesn't define who you are. And I'm really trying to prove that to myself and everybody around me. And to do that, I have to have a really strong mindset. So when I don't sleep much, about 3 hours a night, I jump in my infrared sauna for about 45 minutes and then my cold plunge. Those are my me times to the poor me, and the kind of pump myself up and tell myself, you know, you're strong, you got this. And I have my weak moments, of course. I mean, reporting to federal prison with five kids is definitely on my mind every day. There's no question.
You know, the thing about, as you know, because you've been on both sides of it, the thing about gambling is that even if you're good at it, even if you're sharp, the risk of ruin is just, it's omnipresent. Like, like any day could be the day, right, where you lose
right.
It all. And again, that's even if you're really good at what you do. What would be sort of, you know, as it relates to a relationship with betting, with gambling, What would be your message to people, you know, when you take that into consideration, the risk of ruin and how in one day it can all go to zero?
Well, here's the problem with gambling. No matter who you are, how good you are at it, the discipline is so hard to stick with at all times. We all have a moment where an oh shit moment of like, you know, you lost three in a row and you just feel like you can't lose the fourth game and you want to bet five times that amount to get it all back. Those are the little things that come into your head that you have to fight. And unless you're continuing to stick with, you know, units and making sure you're betting things that aren't just because they're on TV, I would say discipline is the biggest key factor for people who are successful at gambling as opposed to the ones that are not. And anyone listening to this understands that. And to be honest, even if you're not running a sharp program and robots and algorithms and all that stuff, I mean, I would just recommend to anyone gambling that you have to use momentum as something for someone who's not educated. So if you've lost two or three in a row, you're more than likely going to lose the fourth game or fifth game. And most people don't understand that. And when you're winning two or three in a row, that's the time you should be betting bigger because you whether it's the reason for why it's happening, the bottom line is that you tend to be much more educated or better at handicapping when your mind frame is strong and when you're actually seeing things better. And it's no different in gambling. You have to think about that. And when you start chasing, the odds of you winning become tenfold worse. There's no question.
Matthew, I know it's a personal question. I think it can be extremely, you know, instructive, though, as it relates to your kids, right? And whether or not they gamble and whether you would, if with everything that you've been through, like John said, and you just answered it, you know, you have to be disciplined. But when it comes to them, it's kind of like a football player and you ask him, do you want your kids to play? Because he understands how violent the game is and is accessible as it is now. You know, our kids are raised, they're scrolling their phones already, and now we've got these built-in sort of casinos, sports books in our pocket. Are you comfortable? Are you telling them, yeah, go ahead and do it, just be disciplined, here's how you do it, here's where I messed up? Are you saying, no, don't even open that box in terms of your own kids and what you tell them?
Well, clearly the genetic gene in my family has addiction. My dad died very young at 55 from alcoholism. My little brother just got out of prison for doing drugs. Clearly, I have a gambling addiction that I'm dealing with and going to prison. So the message to them is to be ultra careful of anything they do that has addiction, whether it's drugs, alcohol, or gambling, or anything for that matter. Social media can be addicting. So I try to teach them that knowing that you have that gene pool, we need to be extra cautious. But I've gambled with all of my kids. Well, the older ones, 30, 26, 22, they've all gambled with me. But you know, they're girls, and they've done it on a level of going to the dice and betting $5, $10, and never, thank God, I've gone down the path I have. I'm more worried about my four-year-old son because he's a lot like me, and he's a male. Not saying that women don't gamble, they do, but males more, in my opinion, gamble more than women. And I say that because he's sports, he loves all these things already, and he has my personality, which is kind of, you know, going to go for the throat and try to, you know, appease everybody and bet more than anyone once he starts gambling. So I'm going to watch him more than anyone. But I would like him not to, of course. If I could sway him away from it, that would be great. But I assure you, he won't be a bookmaker, and I definitely will make sure he doesn't follow my path. But I do worry about the current epidemic that is happening that's really not being shown yet.
Yes.
These young kids are truly being adverse to watching LeBron James, Kevin Hart, Jamie Foxx on TV commercials, and condoning and promoting gambling, which I understand why, because they're getting paid for it. And so is every league and, you know, NFL, NBA, you name it. They're all condoning it. And the problem is these young kids don't have the brain power to develop and realize they have a gambling problem already. Mm. And they're betting such small amounts, it doesn't seem to be affecting their lives. You know, it's $20, $30. But let's fast forward to 7 years from now when they're 30 and they have a baby and they have a mortgage. And now they're betting $500 a game, and now all of a sudden they can't pay the mortgage, and then now they have a destructive problem with their wife or kid, and that's what's coming. And I worry about that drastically, which I plan on helping a lot of people, motivating, you know, speaking, obviously giving back, because I've seen it, I've been part of it, I've made money off people in these positions. I want to be clear, so I understand. And at the end of the day, I would love to help and promote people from going down that path.
Yeah, I was going to ask and just kind of end on that. I mean, obviously you report, you know, next month when your year is up. What do you hope life for Matthew Boyer looks like?
You know, I don't hope. I know that my life's going to be amazing because I'm ultra confident in who I am and what I do and everything I touch. I know how to make money. I know how to produce. And now I'm doing something where both people win for the first time in my life. Usually I need somebody to lose, you know, as a bookmaker or as a commodity trader. It was very difficult, you know, commissions and all these things to overcome for me to make money. This is the first time where I may be on a stage promoting somebody from how to educate them on gambling better or quit gambling or stop gambling or promote mindset so that they can overcome adversity in their life in any format. And so when they walk away from meeting me, I hope that they learn and educate themselves to be a better human being. So I win, they win. And if I get paid to do that, then I'm not even working. And that's to be the first time in my life I could say that.
The book is Recalibrate, Matthew Boyer. Man, this was really, really good stuff. And we wish you the best of luck. And hopefully we can touch base down the road, man. Thank you for the time.
Thank you for this, Matthew.
Thank you, guys. I hope to be on the show here in about 8-9 months. I think I'm going to do everything in my power to get out early.
Yes.
And I want to show everybody, including the world, what I'm capable of. So thanks for having me today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, Matthew. Thank you, man. Appreciate it. He is.
Thanks for your time, guys.
Yep,
appreciate it.
Pleasure.
He is Matthew Boyer, again, the author of Recalibrate. And, you know, I admire the perspective. I don't know that I would have the same if I had to go away for a year.
I think what I admire is the transparency, the willingness to open up and say, I did this wrong. Don't do what I did. That's the thing. Because he's going to have a life. This year is going to come be up, and hopefully for him, it's done in some months. But he can have a good life and everything else. What you choose to take from it and then say to the world about it, I think is important now for him. Clearly, he wants to, you know, he's paid back $1.6 million in restitution, but clearly he feels like he owes more in terms of trying to steer folks away from this kind of life. I was surprised to hear, though, you know, about the kids part.
Yep,
because when I'd gotten in, so you know, after I'd been in so deep, I would want them completely to stay away from it. But like he said, he's got adult kids now that he's already, you know, was doing this while he was still successful. So you're already kind of down that road.
That was
already gambling.
Really, really interesting stuff there. I mean, imagine getting a $500,000 wire every 2 weeks. Crazy.
Imagine feeling like, you know what, it's time for us to cut Pete Rose off. He's just losing all of his card signing money.
I got too much respect for Pete to let him keep betting.
Poor Pete died in an apartment by himself. It was a sad ending for Charlie Hustle. And so, I mean, that just the idea of him sitting in there betting horses all day.
I know.
And then now he's starting to go up, and he's getting, oh, man. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
And you're, yeah. Ugh.
And sure I honestly, I thought his point about, you know, the epidemic. Right.
Dude, it's huge.
It's because 99% of people do not have the discipline, right? 99% of people, when they go down that road, they do not have the discipline to know when to stop. I mean, they chase and they chase, and it's the risk of ruin is just every day. I mean, every single day, every time you place a bet, every time, you know, it's just, you know, what he's talking about is so real, you know, so real. And I kind of live it. I mean, I'm not even anywhere close to this stratosphere, you know. But if you bet on any level, I mean, if you bet on sports on any level, it's just what you deal with, you know. I mean, that's just the kind of thing you have to reconcile with yourself and hope that you're on the right side of that weighted coin. But I think for the young kids, especially, who are going to get themselves into problems that they can't afford to get out of, you know, I mean, that's what's different. I mean, this wasn't even legalized in Tennessee until 2020.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean,
proliferation of it.
You have an entire generation that's coming up that all they see is ads. And
we won't know the full effects until for a while.
That's
what I'm saying. We won't fully look back on this thing we're kind of dismissing.
That's right.
You know, the monster this could grow into in terms of addiction for future generations until after it's, you know, unfortunately adversely affected.
Totally. Totally.
A big portion of a generation.
So. And, you know, like, I mean, we talk about it, obviously. I mean, it's ingrained now in sports talk, right? It just is part of we talk about odds and bets and futures and things like that. And it's just, and I think, listen, it's instructive because there's, you know, one team is favored to win. It helps us sort of gauge a matchup. Mm-hmm. You know, there's parts where I think it's definitely, it's important. But I, you know, you just do. It's like, where the guardrails. You know, are there real guardrails? And, you know, the further that these leagues get, you know, embedded with these sports books, and it's happening. I mean, it's just, you know, what do you do?
what I did was, and related to most about what he said, was get to a point in my life where I was matured enough to realize, okay, you have an addiction issue, and it's one, frankly, that, you know, it kind of runs in your family.
That's right.
And so this might not just be all on you. This is an issue that, you know, has been in your family. And so if you know that about yourself and your family's history, better for you in your case to go ahead and back out, which is, you know, why you, you know, we made it eventually. Yeah, we were talking about it. We were doing Creasy Bear bets and all. It was fun, $5 here, there. Mm-hmm. But at some point, right, I understand, you know, I'm liking this a little bit too much. It's getting a little bit too easy for me. I didn't feel, I'm going right back. Oh, man, wait a minute, because I can do that with alcohol, too. And we know what happens there. So I'm going to, and that's what he said, is that for him, the addictive person, he's worried about his four-year-old.
Absolutely.
That shows some of those, you know, some of those. So that's what I relate to most. And for those of us, you have to recognize that within yourself that you're not capable of that level of discipline.
Yeah.
You know, or let the level of discipline required and necessary if you're going
to
bet like that.
Well, I think for him, like, he just got to a point where, you know, it had to be a certain amount of money, right?
To even feel it.
Exactly. To even care. Huh. You know, so, and that's the other problem. And like, now, that's not a problem that most people who are listening to this would have. It's like he talked about, you know, you got the mortgage and you're betting $500 a game, $1,000 a game, and you can't pay the mortgage anymore. You know, that's what most people listening to this would have to deal with. But, you know, it all is relative.
But my guess is as his betting addiction increased and he needed to wager more, you're more willing to continue to take the money from Izuhara and things
to fund it.
Because remember, you cut off Charlie Hustle, you start feeling bad for him. You know Izuhara is the awful gambler.
That's exactly right.
Some cases you would say, yes. Well, the same thing as Pete. I feel bad for him. I don't need to be doing this. I'm taking advantage. He didn't cut it off.
Exactly right.
He kept it going. You said, it was a gold mine at that point. And I want to make my big bets.
Yes.
So I'm going to keep taking this money.
That's exactly right. But man, what an interesting and fascinating story.
I like that he's at least off the wheel now.
Yeah,
and he can try to reset. We'll see if he gets it right. You know, hopefully for him, he gets his life right and he finds some peace.
Because I think, like you said, you know, it's going to be tough for him to, when you're in that grind every day and you're chasing that,
live a normal life,
to basically turn that off and like just be again. He was a great dad by all accounts. He was in all the events and things like that. But like, you're not. There's nothing that will replicate that thrill, that rush. Like, there's just nothing that will replace that. And he has to live with that. He has to be okay with that and understand that is the right decision for him. And that's not. I don't think that's going to be easy.
And I would just add, sometimes when you're there and you think you were there for your, it's important to be present.
Right.
There'd be a lot of times that I'm at home.
Yep.
I'm writing my Tigers basketball story.
Absolutely.
I'm doing that for you. I'm not present, though. Like,
for sure.
I'm there. Chris is there. I can say. So if he's at some of them soccer matches, but he's on the phone the whole time, or he's taking action from Izuhara, and, hey, I'm going to place this bet and everything else, and you ain't in there.
Right.
You know,
you couldn't
be there but not be present. And
no
so
doubt.
That goes back to your
challenge.
Kids and their perception. Hopefully it's one of, he was there for us. But I can't. John, when you got that much action going on.
Yeah.
It's got to be awfully hard to be in the present with your family.
No question.
When all that's, because that ain't stopping. That
Absolutely.
Cycle ain't stopping. And
no,
so
it's not.
At least he can get off that ride and try to, you know, focus on, again, on family and resetting and see if he can live that life. Live the life of a pedestrian, civilian like me and Brad.
Yeah.
Like you used to be.
I'm still a civilian.
But
compared to him, I'm a civilian, bro.
We don't want to lose you.
Oh, you're
like,
gonna
we
worry
lost
about
Matthew.
Me. Don't worry about me. I will never take a bet.
That's the message. That's the message here. That's the final message.
I don't feel the need, right? I don't feel that I don't feel the need to do something just because, right?
Well, I'd ask it to you this way: Is it fair to say that? And because you just made the point about him, we start off, we're making 5 and 10, and that's fun and everything else. But now it needs to be a little bit more for you to have fun. Is that fair?
Well, certainly. My hope is that my edge is justified enough to increase this.
You've done more homework and looked in when you say your edge, for those of us that don't understand the hell you're saying, because you're this expert now.
No, my unit size is going up.
That you did when you started, and it was just fun.
Sure,
hey,
sure.
I got a feel.
I certainly understand a whole lot better than I did 5 years ago, right? So that helps. You know, I mean, I have a much better understanding of, you know, I think what I'm doing. And so, yes, have my units increased? Bling. Yeah, they have.
Will they increase?
No.
In seven years? Like, 7 years was what he used.
No.
Okay.
No, because
then you have the discipline.
There's just, like, I think where I come down on it is, whatever it is, it's enough, right? Whatever it is, like, and I'm saying whatever it is.
Well, it's not less than a unit.
Well, my unit is enough.
Okay.
Like, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
I think so.
Like, what I win,
Yes.
Whatever that is.
Yes.
Is enough. It doesn't need to be more. I don't need to risk more to win more, right?
Right.
Whatever I win is enough. That may be in 1 month, that may be one unit. In 1 month, it may be two units. You know, uh-huh. Whatever it is, it's enough. And I think that's where people get sideways with this stuff, is that it stops being enough.
Right.
Is it, at some point, it has to be more, you know,
yeah,
like you talked about, like, you know,
it's
you want to increase the, you know, on the, and again, for me, I have enough.